not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride and do it however you want to do it, and don't let anybody tell you what to do.
Welcome to the Bicycle Media Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the health of the cycling industry. Here at Bicycle Media, we offer video production, website development, retail sales strategy, social media management services, and much more. You can visit us at liftvalet.com/bicycle. My name is Cody Osborne. I'm the host of the show, and I'm not a household name, so you don't have to go and check your Rolodex, but I do have a background in video production, audio production, dating back to 1996. I've worked in the sales and marketing industry for a long time and worked with the Edmonton Oilers, as well as Clear Channel, one of North America's largest outdoor advertising companies. It's now known as Branded Cities here in Canada. But the bike industry has a lot of cool characters, and I started working with bike shops and fell in love with cycling. And I started helping them with their digital marketing, got into search marketing, online reputation. My background in B2B sales and B2C event management has meant that I've been able to offer a lot of really cool services. And I think there's a lot of really cool nuances in the subculture of cycling, from fixie to high-end race to the mountain guys, and of course the emergence of e-cycling. So in this podcast, we're going to talk to a lot of really cool people, from mechanics to bike shop owners to event race event managers, brands big and small, and we're going to learn a little bit about something from them in each episode. So I hope you're going to join us for many more episodes. I've got a background in podcasting from my other venture with Precision Goalie Institute, or PGI. I have a podcast that's been around for a long time with goalie coaching, so podcasting isn't anything new to me at all. The podcast is caffeinated by Roasty Coffee Company, a small batch coffee roaster and cafe in Sherwood Park, Alberta. They now offer free home delivery in the Edmonton area and free shipping Canada-wide on orders over $36. Check them out at roasty.ca. That's roasty.ca. Order yourself some. So thanks, guys, for keeping us caffeinated. In this first episode, I wanted to interview Stephen Fitzgerald. He's the founder of Rodeo Adventure Labs, a bicycle building company out of Colorado. And what I liked about our conversation is he talked about how this thing just started as a group of riders in a race team that then turned into building bikes. And it just stayed true to the DNA of just the get out and ride idea and sort of vibe that they had started back in 2014. Super cool. What a great theme for the start of this podcast. You know, he mentioned that he doesn't really have a huge amount of engineering design experience, but I thought that was really cool. Starting from scratch and then just seeing how it moves along and how you can maintain that DNA and keep it intact, not getting too big, not appealing to everybody, just staying within your niche and being happy with that. Very much reminds me of the music that we're listening to. The tunes that we're listening to, good Canadian guitarist friend of mine, Chris Russell out of Vancouver. I don't even think he rides a bike. Great guitar player in his Fusion Bluegrass band, and his record notes in the show notes on that one as well. So in each episode, I'm going to let the guests do most of the talking. Just a little bit about myself, introduce. Now we're all familiar with each other. But I definitely wanted to put something together as I continue to work with more clients on their web development and their social media strategy, their video production. And again, just talk to the characters out there. So let's get this underway with our first guest, Stephen Fitzgerald of Rodeo Adventure Labs. Stephen, thank you for being my guest this morning. We are all isolated at home. How are you doing?
Well, thank you for having me. I am doing well, I think, all things considered. I think we sort of look around and look at the spectrum of how everybody is doing, and I feel pretty grateful that, you know, I wake up, the kids are healthy, my wife is healthy, and I still have things to do. I'm still sort of, even though everything is slowing down, even with rodeo, I have a tremendous amount of just activity that I can still work on for the company. And it keeps me entertained and feeling productive. So, being an optimist, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, we're all going to kind of get through this. I don't know how long it'll take, but, I'm happy to kind of make hay while given the chance to breathe a little bit. So doing all right.
Yeah, a lot of us that are sitting at home think we're going to be the next BBC dad, where we're, you know, doing these types of podcasts and our little ones run in the room and want to play and so on. So we'll see how we both do.
I think that's beautiful. unintended benefit is the fact that we all don't have to pretend we don't have real lives, and that, you know, we live in these really tightly sealed boxes of work and family and play and things like that. Now they're all just overlapping, and it's kind of refreshing. I like the interruptions.
There you go. I want to just give our listeners just a little bit of a background on yourself, if you could tell us from, you know, cycling perspective to the company that you formed, and we'll certainly talk about what you guys are doing, but just give our listeners a little bit of a background on yourself and Rodeo Adventure Labs.
Well, myself as a cyclist, I've been absolutely in love with cycling since the early 90s, which would have been for me, gosh, I don't exactly know how old I was. Let's say somewhere around 11, maybe, or 12. Just for some reason, you know, didn't like team sports at all, and then found, you know, that the bike was the thing that myself and friends could do, and we could travel far and wide, explore different parts of, I grew up in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. So it was kind of a freedom thing. And then that was sort of where mountain biking was picking up speed, in our area, at least. And a couple of my friends in high school, we got into the early versions of downhill mountain bike racing, because none of us were really endurance athletes. We just, you know, let gravity do the work. So we were riding really early suspension forks, and even early the first gen of like dual suspension, where a lot of things were likely to break after a couple runs down the mountain. But loved it, loved reading Mountain Bike Action, and just every word of every ad was just like, I read it all and inhaled it. And it pretty much stayed that way indefinitely through, you know, comes and goes in waves with, you know, life seasons, but always sort of just kept being a cyclist and riding a bike. Whereas I used to be a really, really diehard kind of mountain biker and roadie suck type guy. Later on, lived in LA, and it's tough to be a mountain biker in Los Angeles in terms of proximity. If you live in sort of the downtown area, you're not going to get to the mountains very easily. So I sort of begrudgingly rode drop bar bikes for a while until I realized the roadies don't suck, and actually there's a cool community there, and road bikes are really fast and fun. And that took me, you know, through decades. And then, you know, off into, I moved up back up into the Northwest and spent a lot of time by myself on Forest Service roads up there, which, you know, wasn't gravel or not gravel. It was just, you know, point A to point B, and what's a road that I can ride that I haven't already ridden. I was doing a little bit of that on my road bike or my cross bike. It didn't really matter what kind of tires we had or any of the gear. It was just really cool to be off in up in the mountains. And eventually we moved to Colorado. That was where I think, you know, even before Rodeo Labs existed, where the genesis of the culture probably was born, with just friends riding bikes for the sake of fun. And I was on a road racing team, just an amateur road racing team that was very strict and disciplined about sort of criterium and road racing, things like that. And that became less appealing. So I eventually left that and started Rodeo Labs just as a team, kind of a counter team that was very unstructured. It had no idea what it wanted to be, other than I realized, look, anybody can start a team, and anybody can start an Instagram account and tell their team's story and show everybody what they're doing. And, you know, someone in Denmark can see what we're doing, and someone, you know, in Denver can see what we're doing. And that seemed really fun, just that interchange. You know, Instagram gets a bad rap for being kind of the me engine, but it's also really cool that you can sort of build a community and talk to a lot of people who are into the same things that you're into. So I and a couple of friends worked really hard in the beginning on just Rodeo Labs being a team. And we put up some core values on our website, which we've actually never edited. They're still there. And that attracted a lot of attention to what we were doing, because I think at the time, which was 2014, maybe not a lot of people had that tone that just said, ride whatever bike you want to ride and do it however you want to do it. And don't let anybody tell you what to do. And just go have fun, have some adventures. And I think that whole mood was already emerging in cycling, and we weren't particularly unique in that. Maybe we were definitely in before sort of the bandwagon of gravel blew up, but there were plenty of people who had a similar mentality. And the thing that maybe made us visible was just that we showed it and communicated the fun that we were having and the excitement that we had, maybe a little bit better than some. And it just made us kind of visible. So we looked bigger and more polished than we were, because the truth of it is, and it even still applies, that we're smaller than anyone thinks we are at most people. And we just kind of shout loud and we're really excited and we kind of won't shut up about, you know, we love bikes and we love doing fun things on bikes. So that was our DNA and it still is. So everything that Rodeo the company became was really just a continued evolution from Rodeo, just a bunch of excited people. You know, that's what we started out as. So I think it's interesting right now with the pandemic and what's going on that we can't really be a high functioning bike company. We still squeak some bikes out and we're still taking some orders that will be fulfilled in a future date. And it's really cool to see that people are still excited about our bikes. But I told everyone here at the office, I said, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to turn back into a bunch of storytellers as long as this pandemic is going on and we're not allowed to congregate and get together, which is exactly what we started out as. So it feels pretty familiar and kind of fun. I don't want to have fun at other people's expense, but it's fun to be able to say, hey, for just, you know, a month or 5 months, whatever it ends up being, we get to go back to our roots, which was just talking about, you know, things we do on bikes, how much we love them, places that we've been. So that's Rodeo's back to that right now. I look forward to being a bike company again, or, you know, focusing on that. But it's okay to pause and to kind of get back to our roots.
You know, I think that's probably the best way to sum it up. You know, some of those core values, which you said have existed right from the beginning, include, you know, never grow up and there are no rules. Can you talk a little bit more just about some of the things that you do as a bike company that are different? You know, you're going to be soon going back into being a bike company. What makes you guys just a little bit, you know, left or right of center and not the standard bike company?
I think on a DNA level, I think the thing that would separate us from being a normal bike company and the thing that allows us to keep our culture intact is the idea that I'm not, as the owner, obsessed with becoming a mass market brand and becoming appealing to everybody. I don't really have anything against brands that sort of get huge and cover the whole spectrum of cycling, everything from like a kid's bike to e-bikes to road racing bikes, you know, pro tour and even gravel, you know, they'll cover all of it. And they have to appeal to everyone as a brand. But I think when you have to appeal to everyone as a brand, you have to sort of dilute any of your rough edges. You have to round them off and become palatable and almost not really be about much in particular. You're not specifically about anything other than volume. We get to be who we are and not be a standard bike company because we don't have to try and appeal to everybody.
Can you talk a little bit more about one of your core values, which is gravel builds character? I love it. And I just kind of want you to break that down a little bit more for our listeners.
You know, when that core value came out was probably, if I go back and look, that had to probably be 2014 or 2015. And even the word gravel probably didn't have the weight that it does now in terms of being the thing. But we definitely, we get to be who we are because we're consolidated as a brand and a culture about what we're about. Rodeo couldn't come out with an authentic road bike right now, and it couldn't come out with, you know, an authentic, like a triathlon bike, something like that. We really only are excited about bikes that are versatile and can be ridden anywhere, which, you know, we got lucky that gravel happened when we were working on what we did, because I don't have a crystal ball. I didn't see it coming. I didn't realize how big it would be. But we were making a bike, you know, and I called it the trail donkey. I didn't call it the gravel donkey. It was just a bike that was about removing constraints and being as adaptable as possible. Then that sort of came up. Gravel came up and everyone said, oh, you make a gravel bike. And I thought, oh, yeah, I guess we do, although I bristle a little bit because I kind of want to say, like, no, we've always just made the bike that we want to ride, and it just so happened that gravel converged with that bike, and we've been carried along by it. So I can't hate that because it's made the company successful, and a lot of people are interested in this kind of bike right now, which I'm really, really happy about. But I do wonder, could the gravel genre crest or become uncool? And if it all moved on, I think we would still be doing this because we're really interested in, you know, can we ride up into the Rocky Mountains and do these multifaceted rides that take us to places that so few people seem to be able to get to by bicycle, or at least on one bicycle. So having an adventurous sort of culture, an adventurous vehicle is what we're all about. And it keeps us small because we'll never be able to cover the entire bike market, but it also keeps us consolidated and authentic. And I think that's what people like about Rodeo Labs, is that we're not blowing a lot of hot air. We're not making up slogans, and we're not jumping into the popularity of what's going on right now. I think they just see some honesty in, you know, the bike that we make and the way that we personally ride it, you know, as the owner of the company, but as the core culture of the company. And then all of the people who own our bikes and buy them tend to ride them that way as well. So it created kind of a tiny little ecosystem that we are a part of the bike industry, but I don't feel like we run our company the way that a normal bike company runs. Our customers, when they come to us, they already know our story, most of them. They already know our bikes, most of them, and they already have a pretty good idea about the way that they want to ride it or the way that they want it built. So we tend to have, I guess, that loyal following is one of my favorite things about, on the business side, what we've built. And I think, we'll see, but I think in light of what's going on right now, that's one of the reasons where I feel pretty confident that community is still there. You know, maybe there'll be people who are very economically affected by everything that's going on. Certainly we're all experiencing that. But I think the community and the excitement for adventure bicycle riding is going to be there on the other side of this. And that makes me pretty excited about, you know, the future and our opportunities.
Yeah, and I think it's a very primal nature to want to get out and explore. You know, we talked about our first experiences on bikes were just about, and everybody says it, it's cliche, you know, when I got onto a bike, I could go further. I mean, myself as a kid here in Edmonton, Alberta, I was leaving city limits and going where I shouldn't have been as a 10-year-old on a bike, and that is appealing, that adventure. And even to this day, I'm almost 40 and I'm finding new trails, places I've never been. And yeah, I'm burning time and getting home late for dinner and loving it. And that's a huge part of it for me.
I think the bike industry in general is probably selling, in a lot of ways, the most honest bikes that it sold in a long time. I think two decades ago, it was focused on Tour de France winning bikes, which is an experience that none of us is ever going to have. But right now it's focused on selling bikes, you know, and even if they're using cliched sort of when the pavement ends, the adventure begins type slogans, that's actually true, even if it is cliched. And from the biggest brands in the world to the smallest frame builders in the world, people who are putting sort of, you know, highly capable bikes together and then just unleashing people on them, people are going out and riding them and they're having a good time. So it's like a very honest, really exciting part of what bikes are about right now. So if this is a big cliche and a big trend and it's just, you know, gravel is white hot and everybody's on the bandwagon, then so what? Because I think people are genuinely having fun, which couldn't possibly be the you know, the outcome of if they were saying everybody in the world should go out and buy a really stiff aero road bike and you're all going to be really fast riders. That would not be an honest statement, but the honest statement is definitely go throw your leg over a fun bike with some fat tires and ride with friends and you're going to have fun. That's an honest statement.
You guys have been here for a long time. The Trail Donkey is on version 3.1 pre-order. Can you talk a little bit about what makes a really great gravel bike, even though that's not necessarily where you guys are headed. Or like you said, it wasn't really where you wanted to throw the dart at the dartboard. Gravel kind of caught up to you, as you mentioned it. What makes even the Trail Donkey so special to you? Because it's been around since the beginning.
Yeah. One thing I didn't touch on is that I don't have a background as a bicycle designer. And I don't have frame building experience. I don't have experience with sort of supply chain and getting a bike built from scratch. I do now, 6 years in, but before that I was always just a bike rider and at best sometimes a decent amateur bike racer, but pretty middle of the pack bike rider, and still am pretty middle of the pack bike rider. So the Trail Donkey isn't a product of, you know, a bunch of professional input and a bunch of engineering prowess, although we have engineers working on it, and I built out a team that can build and deliver a good bike. But the bike as it stands, the Trail Donkey and the Flanimal, which is just a steel cousin, are both completely motivated still by the fact that there is a bike that I want to ride and I want to exist. It didn't exist. And it was a really fun opportunity to see if I could make it, build it. And then I found out other people wanted it as well. So what makes a good bike to me is a question I always keep asking myself. Every time I put a new set of tires on my bike, you know, one day I'll go out on a 32 millimeter slick, and then the next day I'll go out on a 650 by, you know, 2.1 or even 2.4. And I'm thinking like, wow, yesterday this bike felt like this, and today with different wheels and tires, this bike feels like this. Am I really having fun? Is there something that I don't like about it? Is there something that I wished it did better? Am I on the paved bike path home right now, or am I peeling off and hitting some dirt and single track? I'm always just kind of running that question in the back of my mind. Do I love what I'm riding? And is there something about it that I wished it did better? And whereas that was very solitary in the beginning, we did five of the 1.0 Trail Donkey, and me and my friends all rode it. And then 2.0 obviously was much bigger, and 3.0. But now there are a lot of people on our bikes in comparison. Again, being a small company, we're talking about, you know, maybe 1,000 Trail Donkeys in existence. I'm not exactly sure what the number is, but it's very small. But we now have a whole, you know, in Denver, we have a local group of riders who are very close to the core of the company, and we all ride together and we all ride really hard. So we have them as a really great source of feedback. Is this bike good? Do you like what it's doing? And occasionally we'll roll a new rider into that and we'll get some really fresh feedback on, you know, you've been watching us and now you finally have one. So what do you think? So that's really fun to hear. And then when a customer gets one, you know, most of the customers have never really test ridden one because they're all over the country. And we're mostly just, you know, building every one of these in Denver. There are some bike shops that will build them as well, but the idea of pre-riding one of our bikes is pretty, pretty difficult to do. So, you know, they'll get their bike, they'll ride it. And a lot of them, and again, thanks to the great community that we have, will send us first impressions, and then they'll send us more impressions 6 months in or a year out. And then we start building the sense of what makes not just the original bike that I wanted to exist, but collectively, are people happy? And what ideas do they have? And that's where it's been a lot more fun in recent years, maybe the last couple of years. You get requests from people that you would have never thought of yourself about. It would be really cool if, you know, you added dynamo routing, or it'd be really cool if this frame had X, Y, and Z. And you start to roll that into future versions of the bike. And it is no longer just this thing that I had in my head. It's the collective feedback of a bigger community. So for us, what makes a good bike is now like a really plural thing. I guess I am, and you know, some of the people here in the office, we're the funnel that all has to come through. And you know, you get some weird requests for things that, you know, that I can't get behind about what a bike should be. But learning from other people's good ideas, and then the ideas that get repeated the most tend to be good ideas. So you start to, you know, after you've heard a request 3, 4, 5 times, you start to think, that's just not a wild hare. That's something that we need to really be listening to. So our owners and our community end up being our product planners. And then I'm just the guy collecting it all and trying to distill it and then working with, you know, the engineers and the actual geometry designers, et cetera, to kind of relate. You know, I don't really know how to calculate pneumatic trail and wheel flop and all of these other things, but can I describe how I want this bike to ride? And if we change something, can I relate what needs to change? And then there's a conversation there. So rodeo is always going to be about versatile bikes. I do not want bikes that end up highly specialized or pigeonholed into niches. I don't make a gravel racing bike, and I don't make, like a bike packing specific bike. It has to be able to be a bike that you can do a few things on. I think that's just maybe my personality. I care about that a lot. It can't have like really unique systems on it, like weird axle spacings or, things that make you buy more of our stuff because our frame is only compatible with our stuff. I hate all of that. So I tend to be, just as a curmudgeon, really against proprietary suspension designs and just sort of one-off solves that are unique. I like to build a really neutral frame that's just just a platform. It's just a foundation for putting other parts on and then tuning the character of the bike with the huge range of components we have access to right now. That's how we evolve our bikes for different people.
Can you talk a little bit about how folks, learn a bit more about you guys? Do you send bikes out for review? Are you hungry for reviews and 5 stars?
Yeah, that cuts both ways. I would love, I guess in the abstract, I would love a 5-star review and accolades from everyone, including the press. But we don't send bikes out for review. And I think I started feeling that way a couple of years ago when we started getting more requests from magazines or websites for reviews. And at the time, didn't have any because we were so low volume. A reviewer would request a size and I would look and say, well, we've got, 2 of those left and I need to save that because, people are going to buy those and that's our income. I can't take one out of the sales channel and put it in the review channel. And we were selling every bike we made anyway, which is still the case, which is not a big brag. Again, we don't make a ton of bikes, but we do sell every bike that we make. So I would tell, the reviewer, maybe later, but right now we can't do it. And then I started reading more reviews, especially more gravel bike reviews as more gravel bikes were coming out and seeing what, who was getting attention and what reviewers were saying about them. And I don't truly have something against reviewers and magazines and journalists as it relates to bikes, but I think I did decide that the sort of scorecard or shootout-based approach to bike reviews, wherein I send my bike off to someone that I may or may not know, and then they get a certain amount of time, and then they get to sort of grade and rate and even second-guess the decisions that I've made about what makes a good bike according to their rating system. And then they get to write it to all their users, readers, and then the readers all get to weigh in the comments. Didn't really seem like that's not how we got where we are. We didn't get here on the backs of reviews and even, media exposure. And I started asking myself, well, if we do start doing that, what kind of customer are we going to get out of that? Is it the people who are familiar with our story and like the culture of what Rodeo Labs is? Or is it the customer who needs to own the newest, latest IT bike that won the shootout? And I think what's kept Rodeo really healthy is that the customers that we have, by and large, are have a really relational purchase process with us and an ongoing experience with us. So they, if we mess something up, which is something that happens, or if something goes wrong with a bike, which is a thing that can happen and will happen with anyone who makes bikes. Are they sort of on our side and are they patient and understanding as we work through it with them and take care of them? Or are they really hostile and very transactional? I gave you my money. I have this bike. Now I want a warranty or I want. And so there's a a relational customer, and then there's sort of more a transactional customer. And I think that we as a brand would get more transactional customers out of the review space who maybe are less interested in what Rodeo is about outside of the bicycle, you know, the bicycle product itself. And they're more, and I just over time have sort of just gotten more dug in on the idea that the kind of people that I want on our bikes and that I want to buy our bikes is not always going to be the mass market mainstream customer. So I've gotten just kind of really quiet and kind of passive with people who ride in and ask for bikes, you know, for review. And the answer has been 100% no for a year, year and a half, 2 years. So we're not doing it. That's not what got us here. And we are healthy. We are growing. And I guess I just, I'm going to keep doing what works for me right now and follow my gut on that. And I'm going to keep reading other bike reviews. And I think that there are some reviewers out there that are technically excellent at sort of going over the details of a bike and sort of highlighting the goods and the bads. But I don't think I want to really work with them or collaborate with them because I don't know that they would be a net benefit to what we're doing. So it's a weird stance. I second guess myself on that a lot, and I'll ask people here in the office or my business partner, do you think this is crazy? Because I think it is a little bit crazy. Why wouldn't you just take a bike company once you have a good brand and a good product and scale it to infinity and put, you know, shout it from the rooftops from anyone who's willing to help you tell your story? But I think the answer to that is we don't want to be an infinitely large bike company. We built something that I consider, for myself, I consider it to be a little bit exceptional, that we have a neat product and a neat culture and a neat story. And I just don't want to ruin it. And I don't think that we have to, because there's no shareholders to please and there's no business investors looking for a return on investment, you know, in annual profits. We can just stay honest to what did we start out doing? We started out loving bikes, wanting to ride them and then wanting to make them. That's still who we are. Let's not peel off of that and turn into a corporation that's about maximizing profit ahead of, you know, what I would consider the integrity of the brand.
Wow. Great answer. I mean, I referenced Chris Porter with Geometron, who said, hey, we don't make every bike in every style. And if this is what we make, like it, love it or leave it. And I just was like, wow, that's kind of human nature. Oh, you can't have this. Oh, well, now I really want it.
Yeah, I think it's cool to be able to be a part of a bigger community of bike makers. Instead of taking over the industry, why can't we just be one node? And if somebody wants a fork with three eyelets instead of two, which is what we make two. Why don't you make a fork with three? Well, just because I don't want a third eyelet on there. I think it's ugly. I don't think it's necessary. And we can carry everything we need with two eyelets. But if you really want three, I am super happy to refer you to X, Y, and Z companies that make that fork. It's okay that you don't buy a bike from us. So that comes up with what's the weight of the built bike? I want to build a 16-pound or 15-pound gravel bike. And I say, oh my goodness, right at the beginning of the conversation, we're never going to be able to build you a bike that light. So if weight is your biggest thing, then here are two or three other brands that I do respect. And I think that you should talk to them. And it's okay if you don't want one of our bikes. Because the other outcome would be sell people products that they don't really fit with. And you get that short-term buck and that sale. But long-term, what's going to happen? They're not really going to love that bike. Maybe they're going to flip it onto the secondary market quickly. They really want to have kind things to say about what you sold them to their friend. Yeah, I got it. I don't really like it. I think I'm just going to get something else. That doesn't really make your brand stronger. That's just a short-term transaction. So I think, you know, for me, that would be short-sighted. And I think, you know, by making maybe longer-term decisions, it helps you build a smaller but a very consolidated company.
Wow. How can folks learn more about Rodeo Adventure Labs from website and social media?
Well, we are most active on Instagram, which is where we started. I was just looking there yesterday, and I think we have like 3,600 posts on Instagram. And when I saw that, I was maybe a little bit embarrassed. Like 3,600 pictures on Instagram. Like, we are out of, like, that's embarrassing. But what's cool about that, and we're just at Rodeo Labs, one word on Instagram. What's cool there is if someone actually did take the time, and it'd probably take 30 minutes to scroll all the way to the bottom of these 600 images, they would see our very first post from, we are here at Denver Bike Cafe having a beer, and we're starting this thing called Rodeo Labs, and we have no idea what it is. And you can follow us and you can see what it turns into. And then you could go back through every part of our history and see it. You could watch the entire evolution from nothing to team to bike builder to all of the up and downs. That is the coolest kind of archive of what we built. So Instagram is always where we're most active. And then, you know, our website, rodeo-labs.com, that's where we do, you know, we do business. That's how you can get in touch with us. But that's also where we host the journal, which is, you know, our glorified, you know, it's like a blog, but we, you know, we do some short form writing and some really long self-indulgent writing there where we try and dig a little bit deeper. And I'm more and more getting other writers involved in contributing to that. So that's where you can maybe dig if you're interested in what the soul of the company is about more than you can put in an Instagram post. We have posts on there that go all the way back to the beginning, the very first time the Trail Donkey was ridden in a mountain bike race. And the question was, is this a stupid idea? And, you know, there was a post about that in 2014 all the way, you know, to now to, you know, the next thing I'll put on the journal is, you know, I rode, you know, across Morocco in a week long bikepacking race. So as our story evolves, I try to leave really good, you know, kind of mile markers on the journal about the big events that have shaped the company.
Mr. Fitzgerald, it's been great speaking with you. I mean, you're as authentic as they come. I hope one day to be on a Flannimal. Maybe it's the 6.0 somewhere in some beautiful terrain, enjoying myself and being immersed. But for now, I really want to thank you for your time and look forward to reading more of the journal and watching you guys grow.
Well, thank you. And almost feel like it's inevitable that one of these days, you know, we'll be up in Alberta. It's, you know, the road's going to take us up there and we'll be able to say hi and get some rides in person.
Yeah, absolutely. There will be a cold beer in the Instagram post. I guarantee it.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I hope you stay safe up there. And yeah, we're looking forward to all riding bikes together again.
Big thanks to Stephen for his time. I know we're all bunkered down, and I know he wants to get back to building bikes and certainly riding, and I hope he does make his way up to Alberta, or vice versa, I make my way down to him. So next episode is going to be with a gentleman who's putting on a gravel race. I think also a great theme for starting things, because this is the first annual The Range. It's a gravel race event in southern Alberta, and I'm going to be talking to Garth Stott. He's going to talk about the many ecosystems and the preserved lands that this race to be held 2020. The first one is going to be July 25th. And he talks a lot about what is important about rider experience. I think that's so important for race event managers and those putting them on. Is he's really trying to pick up the nuances and deliver that to the rider, talking a little bit about the cap he's going to put on the race for a number of riders. So good conversation coming up in episode 2. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Big shout out again to Roasty. Check them out, roasti.ca. Love them. Thanks for caffeinating the podcast. Cheers for now.